You're listening to the Whale Scout Podcast with your host, Whitney Neggebauer.
Welcome to the Whale Scout Podcast, everyone. My name is Whitney Neggebauer, and today is June 1st, 2020. We have a very special guest on the podcast today, our very own podcast producer, newsletter editor, land-based whale watching naturalist extraordinaire, Instagram feed maker. This is Ariel Wyseth. Ariel, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm hanging in, and that is the best that we can do these days.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk to you today about a really exciting project that you have started, the Summer Salmon Run. Tell us about it.
So, funny thing about this is that this whole thought process kind of came about before the whole quarantine thing happened, but I have been doing a lot of running, and for instance, as an ongoing year-long run for Whale Scout, just to try and keep people engaged in what's going on. Like, and I just figured this is such an easy way that people could do like a walkathon or some sort of fundraiser for whatever whale group they want, and basically start engaging people about the conservation topic they want to focus on as it relates to the whales and the salmon. So that's kind of where it was born out of. For me personally, I have some chronic health issues, and staying physically fit, especially with aerobics and basically keeping my heart really strong, is really important for me. And I don't always have enough motivation to stay on top of it. So I figured if I hold myself accountable to the whales by me continuing to run and stay healthy, then I'm more apt to do that. So
right. So this started and was really modeled after, this is now your second year where you started on New Year's saying, I'm going to run 365 miles in 365 days. And you set it up like a walkathon or a jogathon to be a fundraiser for Whale Scout. And so you did the whole first year, and you posted awesome photos along the way where you would be, you know, traveling back and forth to the Midwest or the San Juans, and you would post selfies with your run and just keep supporters in the loop about it, which was really cool. And then here you are again in 2020, you started another one, and now you're encouraging everyone else to do their own Summer Salmon Run. So how do people get started?
Well, the first thing is to pick what group they want to support. I kind of made a list, and I can send that in with like a link and stuff, but there's kind of a list of different groups out there who are supporting this and on board. But basically, you can pick whatever group you want. It doesn't even have to be about the whales necessarily. It could be any groups supporting forestry restoration or just like habitat restoration of any kind. The overall goal is that it somehow loops back into helping the southern residents. So that's kind of the first step, is just picking who you want to support. Then there's kind of the Facebook side of it. And basically, you, like what I did with Whale Scout, like I went onto the Facebook page and there's a donate button. And then there's also an option to make it into a fundraiser if you want to get other people involved. And then Facebook kind of guides you into making a fundraising page. So that part of it, even though it sounds scary, it's really not that difficult. And what I've been doing has been pretty extreme with like the running and doing a mile. It really can be whatever people want it to be. Like if you want it to be push-ups, like I'll do 20 push-ups a day or something like that. Like you can really set your own goal and do what's attainable. And I think especially now it's kind of really applicable, since a lot of us are staying home. It's not like you have to have a gym membership or get out and go and do that every day. I think we've seen it a lot with quarantine that people have been just doing walks around the block. So if you want to say, I'll walk around the block once a day, let's see how many times you guys can get me to do it with the fundraising. So it's really not like, I feel like using my own experience as an example maybe could scare people off, but really it's just do it how you want to do it and do what's attainable for you. And it's a really great way to keep people engaged who normally wouldn't have any idea what's going on with salmon and orca recovery. So,
well, and I love that you're also getting people outside. You know, we can't do restoration events. No one can travel and camp. You know, there's some hiking people can do right now in the, at least in Washington State, in the Seattle area. Every region is different, of course. But, you know, also just getting outside and connecting with nature, not only does it feel good, but you also learn a little something every time you go outside.
Yeah. I, personally, I don't live near any, really any family. I moved here all on my own 6 years ago and then got a job. But once I got here, so when I was out doing my walks, basically realized that during all this quarantine, the only people I'm seeing and connecting with on a day-to-day basis or day-to-day basis is my roommate and my coworkers, because I do have an essential job. But just, I was having this moment while out on my run, just realizing I was not having much physical contact with other living beings. And I found myself literally hugging a tree to make myself feel better just in the middle of my run. So it's, I think it goes without saying that the endorphins are really good at helping us kind of reset ourselves. So there's that side of it too, especially now. I think people could really use that.
Absolutely. And so you mentioned you moved out here 6 years ago. Let's talk a little bit about you, about where you're from and how you got here.
Yeah, so I'm originally from South Dakota. And if anyone's never been to South Dakota or seen what it looks like, just imagine what at least eastern South Dakota is, basically the opposite of what western Washington is. We're very hilly. We have a lot of big trees. We have a lot of contact with like the Salish Sea, and South Dakota is very flat. There are trees, but they're not very big, at least to our standards. And it's a lot of cornfields. It's like the sea is basically farms. So my first ever introduction to the Salish Sea, or actually just the ocean in general, was through Free Willy. I was only 2.5 years old, and just seeing that movie was like this milestone moment in my life. And that's really how, I don't know, just something about seeing those whales on there just really struck a chord with me from the time I like wasn't even in grade school yet. So that's kind of what sparked my, basically just my love and my interest for the Pacific Northwest in general, was the Southern residents. And it was to the point where I decided after college, like, you know what, I think I'm going to move there. I'm just going to give it a shot, kind of see what happens. I would like to, you know, go to work and then have the chance of seeing whales after, like just in my day-to-day life, and just see how that pans out for me. And from there, it's really kind of taken a life of its own, and it's been a really fun ride.
So do you remember the first time that you saw orcas?
Yeah, that was, it's so funny to go back and think about that now, because if I had that same experience now, I would be so disappointed. I was actually, before I moved here, I took a job out here one summer in college on Orcas Island at a summer camp. And we were doing staff trips before any of the campers got there, just so that the trip leaders could kind of work out some of their kinks. And the staff leader of our group came up to me and said, you know, you're the first person, or you're the only person in our group who's never been here before. Like, what would you like to experience? And I'm just like, okay, this is my shot. I'm like, well, I really like orcas. I really like the southern residents. It's like my dream to see them. And I love camping. So we ended up having like the easiest staff trip. Everyone else went on like 18-hour canoe trips around the Salish Sea in really bad conditions. Other people went on 8-hour hikes the long way up Moran State Park, carrying all their gear on their back. We got in the car, took the ferry from Orcas over to Friday Harbor, drove out to a county park, set up our tents, and then we just proceeded to sit on the green area, like the grassy knoll at county park all day. And after like 6 hours of just laying there sunbathing, we noticed that some of Jay and L-Pod kind of were out mid-straight from us, like out from Limekiln. And they came just close enough that in the view that you could tell they were orcas, but in reality, going back and looking at my pictures, they were just little specks out there. But that moment was just like a little fire just got lit in my heart and never really went away. So it's really fun to go look back at it now. And I've had so many experiences at the same park and just seeing how close they come in, and being at Limekiln when grannies come in like 10 feet off the shore. It's really funny to go back at that moment that I'm still really excited about to this day and just see, recognize, I guess, how much of like not a great sighting it was, but just the fact that it was a sighting was really an important thing to me at that moment. So
that was your first experience. What would you say has been your best, the highlight?
There are so many, but I think my best experience, it kind of delves into that little bit of whale kind of magic that we feel. The backstory, this was about, my best experience was probably June of 2017. And earlier that year, I had a really bad flare up with my chronic illness to the point where I was in the ER a lot trying to get treatment, and had actually been hospitalized for a couple days. And one of the things that kept my spirits up was thinking about one of my favorite whales, Kasatka specifically. I've always really connected with her because she and I were born the same year. And so just laying there in the hospital, I'm like, you know what? Maybe this summer I'll get to see Kasatka. That'll be a really cool thing. That's something to keep me really happy right now, even though being in the hospital is really painful and scary. So fast forward from January to June of 2017, it was my first camping trip to the San Juans that year. And there had been no reports of southern residents for weeks. I had this feeling though that like something was going to happen, that somehow we were just going to have just the right luck and some miraculous thing was going to take place. So my sister and I were parked up on Cattle Point Road, just having lunch. It was pretty foggy, but fog was starting to clear. And I kept just having this feeling like I was being watched from behind. I don't know if anyone else has ever had that feeling. Keep turning around, looking like back down the shoreline. And my sister's like, what's going on? And I'm like, I have this really weird feeling that Kasatka's back there, and I can't really explain it. I have a feeling she's like right there. And all of a sudden we see whale watch boats coming from that direction going inside the island. So completely said to me that, yeah, there's nothing back there. No one like would just drive right by him and not see him. And turns out there were transients in the Cattle Pass area and just north of there. I don't know if anyone who kind of knows the area, but there's 4th of July Beach. That's kind of a big bay back in there. So we decided to turn the car around, just kind of go see where these boats might have been heading. And we're starting down the road to 4th of July Beach. And we noticed that there were transients almost on the beach in there. And there were a ton of whale watch boats there. No one was on the beach yet, but a lot of people found out and got there almost right after we did. And then I heard Monica, who was right next to me, had a radio on. And over the radio, she heard that someone found L-Pod right around the corner at Pyle Point, which is basically where I was looking back towards to see if Kasatka was back there. So just, I felt like the setup at that moment was really perfect and was kind of having like an excited panic attack. But my sister and I then proceeded to kind of hike down some of the trails at Granny's Cove. We had heard that L-Pod was going up island the other way, but I just turned to my sister and I'm like, you know what? We're down here. I have a feeling she's going to be here. Let's just sit here and wait and see what happens when the tide turns in a half hour. And lo and behold, about 45 minutes later, we started hearing those exhalations from around the corner, and they were getting louder and louder. And then you see the first whale come around the corner. She's right on the shoreline, and she got right in front of us, and it was Kasatka leading the whole group and came like within 50 feet right past us. So that was awesome. Probably just with the whole background, my most magical moment right there. Kind of tear up a little bit every time I think about it.
Yeah, it's always, you know, the experience too of waiting, I think, is always a big part of whale watching, especially land-based whale watching, and it builds up to these incredible moments that I think are really neat when they're done on the whale's terms as well. It's such a really beautiful story. So you are a kid of the 90s. You've outed yourself here. So you were also a big-time Free Willy kid. And I kind of thought that I was a Free Willy kid, but then I've gotten to know a lot of other people who are really obsessed. And then I've now come to notice that I was really obsessed with Michael Jackson at the beginning of the first film, less so much about the rest of the movie. But so you have, you know, followed the Free Willy story, and also have gone on some of your own adventures to places where the film was, you know, took place. Tell us about that.
Well, it's funny because the only reason I know about the San Juan Islands specifically is because I was in college one day, really bored, didn't want to study, and had turned on Free Willy 2, and I'm like, dang, I wonder where they filmed this. Like, and so I went on IMDb, and I'm just like, wow, San Juan Islands, what's that? Is that Puerto Rico? So I just think that that's funny that just me being so interested in that movie kind of is what led me here in the first place and just getting to know more about the area. But I have a pretty big family, an extended family that I'm like really well connected with, especially like not even my own cousins, but my dad's cousins as well. And growing up, I always knew he had a cousin who lived in the Free Willy City. They were like, which is Astoria. And I thought that was the coolest thing growing up. And I'm like, one day I'm going to go there.
So you went to Astoria?
So this past summer, my family, we ended up taking a trip that kind of encircled like Western Washington, and we ended up down on the Oregon coast and out to Astoria. And I was asking my cousin, I'm like, hey, I know you know the person that owns the house where they filmed Free Willy. Can we just go drive by? Just go take a picture. And she's like, yeah, but we're not going to bother her. You know, she's got some stuff going on. We're not going to like knock on the door or anything. I'm like, oh no, I know, it's okay. I want to get my parents and my sister outside the house with me. That would be like the coolest family photo in my mind. So we're out there like outside the house. We took our picture. My cousin's like, okay, yeah. Let's get back in the car. I was dragging my feet about getting back in the car, to say the least. I was walking very slowly back. And my sister, as she was getting in on the opposite side of the car, she's looking at the house, and she's like, Ariel, there's people coming outside. There's a lot of people coming out of the house. And I whip around and I'm like, Susie, is that your friend? Go talk to her. And my sister and I kind of started making a scene, saying that really loudly to where we were noticed. And then she's like, oh yeah, we made eye contact. Let's start talking. And they're so nice and very gracious that when I just blurted out, like, I love your house. I've loved this house since I was like 2.5 years old. And she's like, oh, from the movie? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, oh, like come inside. Let's show you around. And in that moment, I thought I was just going to pass out. I was so excited. I told my dad, I'm like, just be prepared to give me oxygen. Like, I can't breathe. I'm so happy.
That's such a cool story. And so was the inside everything that you had hoped?
It was. They really hadn't changed much at all. But the first thing, like, as far as like the drapery and furniture, it's pretty much all there. And a lot of the furniture that was used in the movie was theirs. And it was really funny to see that the first piece of art you see when you walk in the door is this giant framed photo of Southern residents, and it's all signed by the cast and crew of the movie. So I was just fixating on that, and I'm like, you know, if you ever like need someone to take this off of your hands, I will definitely, like, here's my number, give me a call. this is like just like treasure to me. And they basically let us tour like the whole house, and we're telling us stories about the movie that I was in heaven. Like, some people go to Universal Studios or different places to get like the Harry Potter experience, and I'm like, this is my Harry Potter experience right here.
That's so cool. And their film really changed the trajectory of a lot in the Pacific Northwest, yeah. And for Southern residents and for other captive whales. You know, there was the huge push after the film to free the whale that was in the film named Keiko from a aquarium in Mexico, actually. So yeah, that's really cool. And I hope you get a ring on your phone someday that, you know, that house is for sale or something. That's really neat. So, you know, normally for you, I know you as a friend, you would be spending your summer every moment that you're not working up on San Juan Island, camping and, you know, doing all that you can to be with the whales and also help the whales. You know, this summer is a lot different, but you're putting together this fantastic alternative way, you know, the Summer Salmon Run to get involved and to encourage as many people as possible to get involved. You know, what in the future is your hope for the whales?
Well, the very minimal hope is that they're still here. I think them not being here, whether they choose to move on to a different place to live or they go extinct, that's probably my biggest fear. But my biggest goal is that, like, anytime I see myself in the future, I see myself up there every summer with my family, like kids and grandkids, and just sitting there on the shoreline and watching them just be all fat and happy and well fed and not having a lot of the drama, specifically like drama with Scarlett and Telequa that played out in 2018, not having any of that be in our forefront, just kind of keeping all those bad things in our rearview mirror and just basically like creating a world where they can not just live, but that they can thrive. That's my overall goal and hope.
Yeah, fat whales. That would be fantastic.
Yes. Like transients.
Yes, yes. The mammal eating orcas seem to be doing a whole lot better. They're little chunkers, and that's fantastic. I'm glad that they're doing well. Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting and being in front of the camera. As always, I want to remind everyone, if you want to hear more podcasts like this, you can go up to whalescout.org, and under the podcast sections, you can see all of the podcast episodes that we've done. The majority of them have been coordinated by Ariel herself. And we now have a YouTube channel where you can see a video podcast and us chatting back and forth. So just go to YouTube and type in Whale Scout and you will find us there. And you can subscribe on YouTube and on iTunes to have these episodes sent right to your phone. So thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Whale Scout podcast. Your voluntary donation goes toward the recovery of whale species and enhanced whale watching opportunities in the Pacific Northwest. Please visit www.whalescout.org for more information.